Hunting for the Nushagak Peninsula caribou herd continues to be a very popular activity, to be judged by the number of harvest reports being turned into the Togiak office and the number of federal permits being issued to interested hunters. And why not? The herd is large and the travel conditions to them are pretty darn good right now. I will say this. I have hunted caribou on the peninsula in the fall and in the winter. My experience with those two seasons are that, while the animals look remarkably alike, they have about as much in common as your average tree sloth does with a snowshoe hare. In other words, it's like hunting two different species. The caribou of the fall, during the times I have been there, are fairly calm animals. They are easy to spot at a distance and get close to, in this case close being under 100 yards. I haven't had any winter experiences in recent years, due to the lack of winter travel conditions. But what I remember are animals that never seem to stop running. So what you have are fairly calm, approachable animals in the fall and extremely skittish, nervous animals in the winter. Two very different critters indeed. And that can call for different tools to get the job done. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. There are any number of ways to successfully harvest a caribou. The end result is meat in the freezer, but different folks choose different routes to get to that point. Caribou are most often harvested by centerfire rifle, but they are also taken by pistol, muzzleloader, and bow and arrow, to name a few other methods. In large part, pistols, muzzleloaders, and bows are close-range weapons and requires a greater effort on the part of the hunter to close the gap enough to successfully kill an animal. In my opinion, the fall hunt would provide such opportunities for hunters who are experienced with these weapons. Winter, however, is mostly a long-range affair, and I'm going to guess that during any given year, most of, if not all of the caribou harvested are taken with not just a centerfire rifle, but a scoped centerfire rifle. Rifle scopes are magnificent devices, aren't they? Used properly, they help to make for more successful, efficient hunters. They allow us to humanely harvest animals, such as skittish winter caribou, at greater distances than would otherwise be possible. Modern rifles have sighting devices. Some have no scope and make use of what's called iron sights. Iron sights typically have a front sight at the front of the barrel and a rear sight. These two sights are aligned in such a way as to allow the shooter to hit what he or she is aiming at. Iron sights require a great deal of practice to be proficient with, and their range is, practically speaking, much less than that of a scope. If I were a betting man, I think my money would be pretty darn safe betting that most of you listening have some sort of scope on most or all of your rifles. I know that's the case for me, as all but one of the centerfire rifles and rimfire rifles in my gun case have scopes, the lone exception being an Ithaca Model 49 single-shot lever action, which isn't tapped for a scope. The primary reason I have so many scopes is what I mentioned earlier, that a scope makes me a more effective shot at longer ranges. My goal is always to get as close as I can. A scope is there for when I hit that range, and it's still too far for iron sights. Historically, modern man first started trying to strap a scope to a rifle, since not long after Galileo and some of his cronies first started making refracting telescopes in the 1600s. The first documented telescopic rifle sight was created by Morgan James in Utica, New York in the 1830s. Another fellow, John R. Chapman, worked with James on some of his ideas and designs, and they eventually produced the Chapman-James sight. Just a bit later, in the 1850s, another New Yorker, William Malcolm of Syracuse, began producing sights of his own design. Malcolm's scope improved the windage and elevation adjustments over previous models, and his scopes became standard staples during the Civil War. Using these scopes, there were confirmed kills out past 500 yards, which, when you consider that they were using black powder rifles, is extremely impressive. Variable power rifle scopes, the ones which allow us to decide on a power setting, and such as we have today, were not developed until the late 1940s, and, as with anything new, it took a while before all the bugs were worked out and they became truly reliable. Today's rifle scopes, at least those of good quality, are remarkable tools. They are a great option for hunters. In general, it's easier to shoot a scoped rifle proficiently quicker than it is to shoot with iron sights. Really decent scopes have solid light transmission, which makes taking a shot at the beginning and end of the day, when actual daylight is less, much easier to accomplish. Good scopes give you a better sight picture by allowing you to more clearly identify where to shoot on an animal's body through seeing it better. And as mentioned, it allows hunters to harvest animals at greater distances. Also, for aging hunters with failing eyesight, it can mean the difference between hunting and not hunting. As with anything, there is a lot of personal preference that goes into deciding on the right rifle scope. However, there are a few general things to consider. For me, some of what I take into account with rifle scopes includes how rugged it is, how it does in wet or cold weather, optical quality, how much light it gives me at the beginning and end of the day, magnification, and, a big one for a lot of people, cost. Really, many of the qualities that you'd hope to find in a good scope are the same things that you'd look for in a quality pair of binoculars, which was the subject of a past episode on this show. The ruggedness or durability of a rifle scope refers to a couple of things. How it handles rough conditions in the field and still holds its zero, stays sighted in, and its ability to hold that same zero through the repeated recoil from shot after shot after shot. Scopes need strength to stop them from becoming dislodged or damaged when shots are taken. Some of that is the scope mount, but a lot of it is also the scope. Tied to this durability, this toughness, is a scope's ability to shed water or remain fog-free. These qualities are particularly important for those of us here in Alaska. With regards to the elements, we deal with a lot harsher conditions than many hunters in other places. When I talk about optical quality, I'm talking about the glass used for the lenses and how clear of an image they yield when you look through the scope. The very best scopes have superior clarity and almost no visual distortion, even around the edges of the lenses. Optical quality can be really critical when you're trying to pick out details of an animal's anatomy against a drab brown background, as can often be the case in the fall. Animals seen through top-notch scopes simply pop with detail and clarity when you look through them. Light transmission is one of the easiest tests to use to separate the decent scopes from the really good ones. What do I mean? For the longest time, I got by with decent but not great scopes on my rifles. On some rifles that I have, that's still the case. Why? Well, that's as simple as cost. But that doesn't mean I don't recognize the value of what's found in a better scope. One of my hunting buddies has nothing but top-of-the-line stuff on his rifles. When we first started hunting together years ago, I discovered the difference between my decent scopes and his great ones. He typically had at least another 30 minutes of solid shooting light at the end of the day than I did because of the superior light transmission of his better scopes. I would look through his, look through mine, and realize that we were looking at the world through very different eyes. To me, light transmission is one of the very best reasons to get the best possible scope you can afford. Animals are often moving during the first moments of the day and again during its very last waning moments. It pays to have a scope that will allow you to maximize those times. Magnification is something that people think about when buying a scope, but in my mind it's not that big of a deal. The most common magnification seen on variable power scopes today is a 3x9 power, which means at its low end it has a magnification level of 3, and at the high end, 9. Honestly, 9 is more than ample for the very longest distances that most are competent shooting at. Unless you're targeting prairie dogs in a different time zone, this probably shouldn't be any kind of a real factor in buying a scope. Which brings me to the last and often driving factor in selecting a rifle scope, cost. The advice I gave during the binoculars episode is true here as well. Buy the very best you can afford. Seriously. Rifle scope quality is tied pretty strongly to cost. You will almost never find the very best in scopes for a lesser price, and higher costing scopes will provide better scope quality. So what does that mean exactly? Well, only you can determine that based on your own budget and whatever other factors are the most important to the type of hunting that you will do. One of the very best hunters I have ever known, and he was a phenomenal shot thanks to his army training, told me once that he'd rather have a crappy gun with a great scope than a great gun with a so-so scope. At the time, I thought he was nuts. With the benefit of wisdom brought about by the passing of time, I now understand that thought. If you're looking for me to toss out a dollar amount, I'd say that brand new scopes of a quality level I've described start in the low hundreds and go up from there. That doesn't mean you can't have a good scope for less. It just means you may be giving up a bit in some way, such as with light transmission. As always, there are ways around it, if you're persistent and know where to look. I have found really good scopes that give me all I want and more for a fraction of the new price on sites like eBay. The trick is to know what you're looking for. Irrespective of whatever it is you're hunting, or whether there's a scope involved or not, best of wishes on your efforts, and be safe while you're out there. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.